Holly Bohannon versus 8th Judicial District. Real party in interest, Christopher Bohannon, case number 69719. Mr. Fling, are you ready?
Yes.
Proceed.
Good morning, Justice. Jack Fling on behalf of Petitioner Holly Bohannon. What we have here is we need to start out with the context of what type of underlying case this is, and it's a child custody matter. What we're talking about is contempt that was found at the district court against a parent who the district court determined has a drug addiction problem. Within this context, we have several issues in this case. One is whether there was jurisdiction to issue an order of contempt in the first place. Two is whether proper constitutional safeguards were put in place because it was a criminal contempt proceeding. Three is that there's a question, and I would submit to the court that the client, my client's conduct, if indeed she did use drugs, was not willful because she was deemed to be a drug addict. Four is that the order, the underlying order, as it was applied by the district court, was ambiguous in nature and shouldn't have been basis for a finding of contempt. And five, public policy in this case. And it's a bit of a unique argument, I guess, but we're relying pretty much on the fact that this context is a child custody case. And what we have here is a court placing a parent in jail for the alleged use of drugs. And in a child custody case, the polestar is well defined, is the best interest of the child. And in this case, I would submit to the court that there's no basis to put a parent in jail that serves the child's best interest. The child's best interest in this case were not served by ordering the parent to go to jail, and for the record, the underlying order was stayed, so that my client was never actually in jail pending these proceedings. As to the jurisdiction issue, under Awad and Pengilly, it is required, it's jurisdictional, that the affidavit be a sufficient affidavit. In this case, what we have is we have the respondent's affidavit that has no personal knowledge in it. What he alleges in that affidavit is that if my client tests positive for drugs, she would be in violation. He alleges that past drug tests were positive. There's nothing affirmative saying she is now in violation, and yet the court issued an order to show cause that she proved that she had not used illicit drugs or that she was going to pass the patch program. In this case, the finding of contempt and the sanction of jail time was not remedial in nature. And as this court recently found in Lewis versus Lewis, there needs to be a purge clause in order for the contempt to be civil in nature. There was no purge clause. The sanction of jail time was punishment in this case for the alleged use of an illegal drug. The reason this is important is because if there are criminal sanctions and criminal contempt in this case, my client was entitled to a beyond reasonable doubt burden of proof. It was also the respondent's burden to make his case. Instead, it happened backwards, as if it was a civil contempt. There was an order to show cause issued against my client, where it then became her burden to come into court and show cause why she shouldn't be held in contempt. That was backwards, and it should have been reversed. She did have an attorney, so that is not an issue, but the burden of proof is certainly an issue in the case. Now, if it's a criminal contempt, there must be a willful violation. In addition, the order that was alleged to have been violated stated that she needed to willfully violate additional court orders in order to be held in contempt, because it was a sanction from 2013 that stayed 160 days in jail. That was what the court in this case relied upon in 2015 as lifting 30 days of that and sentencing her to jail for allegedly using illegal drugs and allegedly violating the court's orders. Now, in this case, I would submit that her conduct could not have been willful because as the court deemed, she is an addict. The National Institutes of Health states that addicts don't have the self-willpower to stop many times. As respondent had noted in his brief, 12-step program. That is 80% of addicts are in the 12-step program, or they get into this 12-step program. And the first step is admitting you're powerless. So admitting you're powerless certainly to me sounds like you're not able to control whether or not you're going to use drugs again. And relapse is very common for people who are drug addicts. So what we have is a lack of willfulness. Now, in addition to that, there's no proof of willfulness. There was no evidence submitted at the court below of willfulness. My client would have had to do one of two things in order to even have been deemed to have willfully violated the court order. One would have been to have used illicit drugs. In this case, the record shows that the only thing that she had done, according to the record, is she had used Suboxone, which is an opiate treatment drug, similar to methadone. So she was on Suboxone, which was a prescribed drug. So that wasn't an illicit drug use. The other reason the court found that she had possibly used illicit drugs was because she had tampered patches or she had unusable patches. And so that was a presumed dirty test. And that goes back to the burden of proof that it should have been on them to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she had actually used drugs. The other is that she willfully violated the order, and I've already addressed the willfulness issue. You also need to look at whether the underlying order was ambiguous. The order that she was found to have violated stated that she must participate in the patch program. The only independent witness that testified at the evidentiary hearing was the owner of the patch program, the person who runs the program and knows all about it, and that owner unequivocally stated she did participate, she just didn't do well. The court then found that she had not participated and that she had failed the program. Passing the program was never part of the order. It was participation. And I believe that the record shows that she indeed did participate.
Also, could you devote some time to the general question as to whether these contempt orders are appropriate in reunification plans at all?
I don't believe that they are appropriate in reunification plans, and here's why. In the context of a child custody case, if we're looking at the best interests of the child, and certainly under the circumstances here, there are other means to protect the child, which is what the court appeared to try to do here. And the court stated many times the reservation of putting an addict in jail, they didn't believe that this was the right thing to do. The judge stated, I don't think it works to put people in jail, but I need to get a message across to you. That was the reasoning the court gave for the actual jail sentences. I don't know how else to get a message. I would tell you to go to inpatient, but I can't order that. I can order you to go to jail, though, and I hope that helps. Now, that relationship of going to jail and becoming sober and that affecting the messages of the child, I think, is extremely
If this offended. Wasn't a reunification setting, I mean, the Child Protective Services was not involved and was not attempting to terminate parental rights or remove the child from the mother's home.
Correct. The procedural posture in the case
is between two private parties over child custody, and I get that the child's best interests are triggered, but in this setting, does the court even have authority to direct a parent into alcohol and drug rehabilitation?
I don't
believe at the motion of your ex-spouse or your soon-to-be ex-spouse.
I don't believe that the court does. I believe that the court has the ability to strongly recommend and...
Or to say you can't see your child if you're going to do drugs, but I mean...
I think the court has that power. I think the court, under the best interest analysis under the statute, certainly has the power to say, you're not going to see your child. Your visitation is supervised, your visitation is suspended. Those types of things did happen in this case. And actually, when...
Right, but it went further. It said, thou shalt enter a drug rehab program, right?
Well, in this case, the judge made a comment that she didn't think she had that power. So she did tell her she needed to go to a drug rehabilitation center, but then she mentions also when she sentenced her to jail, I don't think I can actually order you to go to an inpatient
facility. And to be clear, this was not a reunification context.
Yes, not a reunification. What happened was mom's visitation per dad's motion was suspended. Mm-hmm. Dad filed a motion for contempt, which the court closed the case without finding any issue of contempt, sanctioned mom. Mom then turned around a couple months later and filed a motion to reinstate her visitation. Dad then filed a counter motion for contempt on the same issues when the case had already been closed, and that's another issue, is whether that's...
Procedurally,
how do you close a case when that issue's been before the court? The court makes a finding of sanctions, and then come back on the exact same thing and say, well, she tested positive in the past, and I think she will again. At that point, the affidavit is deficient because we're going forward, and that's the procedural postures of where we were, is that the court at that point said, you know what, I'll go ahead and grant an order to show cause, and we'll have an evidentiary hearing on it. And then they did. And what I believe is that the order to show cause hearing was inappropriate because it was a criminal context, and I don't believe that the burden was met by dad in that case to show that mom had violated the order. In terms of best interest of a child, there's some other issues that I think are important for the court, is that I think at the district court level, the court wants to encourage parents to stipulate to things like drug rehabilitation or drug testing. I know of at least one district court judge who doesn't believe that they can order drug testing. They don't believe they can order the parent to it unless it's stipulated to. I think this has a chilling effect when a parent knows I'm going to go to jail if I'm found to be an addict or I'm found to be doing drugs. And I would submit, as I have before, that really the remedies here are look at what's in the best interest of the child. In this case, if you throw mom in jail, she has telephonic contact. She has Skype contact. She may not have in-person contact. Well, that ends at least for the period she's in jail. She has a job. She's ordered to pay child support. That's impacted when you throw mom in jail. How is the child really helped, which is what the focus should be in this context? The child's not helped by throwing mom in jail. You know, and I understand that the court can be frustrated with parents and drug addiction and things like that, but it's really not a case of you're in possession of drugs. It's not a criminal case like that. It's criminal because we're saying you violated my order and I'm going to sentence you to jail for doing so. It's not a remedy for the child. It's not really a remedy for dad. It's just putting a person in jail because they have an addiction. I don't think it's appropriate in a child custody case. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Aaron Briggs here on behalf of the natural father, Christopher Bohannon. Although I was not the trial counsel, I am familiar with the record. I did submit the briefs in this matter. Addressing the issues started with the jurisdiction. It's our position that the court had proper jurisdiction in this matter. Pursuant to AWOD versus 8th Judicial District Court, there was a couple affidavits submitted in this context. The first one was submitted in 2015 as part of a counter motion, and it was based on text messages that were found on the iPad that was linked to mom's cell phone upon the return of the subject minor from a supervised visitation, and those text messages showed that the mother was, you know, attempting to purchase illegal drugs. And that was the basis of the first order to show cause. Now, I guess my reading of the record is, at the end of that first hearing, there was a stipulation between the parties that mom would attend the options program and the rest of the contempt hearing was stayed. So there wasn't a finding or a decision on the merits. It wasn't closed out. Mom was in order to participate in the options program. And I guess mom's not arguing that the word participate is ambiguous. And I would submit that the reasonable definition of it is that it requires more than just attendance. And they had testimony from the owner of options, with Cammie Reeves, who came in and testified what's involved in the options program, how they inform the participants exactly what you have to do. They sign a written contract outlining the rules and what is involved in participation. And part of that, at least from my reading of the record, was testing clean. And I think that's kind of what a reasonable person would assume. If you're participating in a drug treatment program, part of participation would involve not using drugs. And this is where mom failed. And the second part of the second order to show cause that was when mom moved to reinstate visitation was based on the positive drug test and the failure of the option. And the failure of the options program to participate in the options program. And so this was a valid civil contempt hearing. They acquired jurisdiction pursuant to both of those after the declarations that were attached to the motions for order to show cause. That, you know, mom was on notice of it, she had not acknowledged the order was valid, and she disobeyed the order.
Sir, should the district court be distinguishing between the nature of the order that it's making a finding of contempt? For instance, the initial contempt or issue was unsupervised visitation. when supervised visitation had been ordered. Should the court be considering the nature of the underlying conduct and comparing those to, say, the conduct of her using drugs, not doing a program, things for her that aren't intertwined necessarily with child safety?
Well, I would submit they were all intertwined for child safety in the best interest of the child. It's a large reason for most, for a large portion of fourth grade GB cases come in because of drug use, specifically methamphetamine. And so they are tied to the best interest and the safety of the child, and it was in this case also because the subject minor was returned in the first. The original contempt orders for the 160 days that were stayed were based on mom's use of illegal drugs while she had access to the child. The current ones from 2015 that brought this back in was mom had then had supervised visitation, but was, you know, there was a prima facie case later that she was using drugs while having supervised visitation, and the parent who has the access to that child while they're using illegal drugs is potentially putting that child in danger.
But don't you distinguish that from when the parent is off on her own using illegal drugs, going without the child and is testing positive for use of drugs?
Yes, if the parent has no access to the child and is not under a court order not to use drugs. I think part of this was the way they laid the stipulation out for the options program was if she did this, was the requirement to reinstate her visitation. And instead she came back before the court saying, you know, essentially I didn't do this, but reinstate my visitation. So at that point, I think the court is incumbent upon the district court to consider, you know, all of the circumstances that surround this, including the fact that she was unable to complete this court-ordered patch program and how that impacts the best interest of the child in whether they're going to reinstate her visitation. And then the order to show cause just came as an ancillary related issue to that. But then what brought it back before the district court was, if mom had failed the patch program and not had come back asking to have her visitation reinstated, I think we'd be in a slightly different situation. But when she has to have her visitation reinstated, I think the district court has to consider the fact that she could not pass the patch program. And it was only, and it wasn't like it was a long period of time. This all happened in a relatively short period of a couple of months. That after maybe 2 or 3 months, and so I wasn't trial counsel, I don't remember the exact length of time, but I don't think it was any longer than all this happened in 2015, that she couldn't complete the patch program. Because I know the patch program is a 12-week program. And
I can understand, Mr. Grigsby, how that might give rise to denying her unsupervised visitation, her request, but I'm not sure that that extends to putting her in jail. And that's really the problem here.
And I was saying that for my reading of the record, the jail time was still meant to have a coercive effect. It was always meant to stop mom from using drugs, especially if she had access to the child. And even in the last one was where the district court reimposed the 30 days of the suspended time. The way I read the record is the district court was trying to acknowledge that they don't have the power to force her into inpatient treatment, but was trying to compel her to go into inpatient treatment by saying, look, I have no other option to impose this time. Now, I would concede.
So if a parent walks in and says, okay, I'll stipulate to drug treatment program, which is what happened in this case. Now they put themselves at risk for going to jail by having agreed to do it voluntarily as opposed to the court recognizing that the court couldn't compel it.
Well, she was in that situation because she agreed to do the options program, which is kind of an outpatient treatment program.
Mm-hmm.
So it has the same counseling components and drug testing, around drug testing. So she agreed to participate in that program. So I think she put herself at the same level of risk. The district court still didn't want to impose a time and was trying to coerce her into going to an inpatient because they realized the outpatient wasn't enough. Now, I don't actually concede that based on the Lewis, this court's decision in Lewis v. Lewis from, I believe, the summer of June of this year, that at best the order was inartfully drafted, probably should have, and this may have to go back for the judge's. My reading of the record, I can infer that the judge was trying to say, do one or the other. I'm going to impose this time, or you do inpatient treatment. That should have been contained in the order. I know this case came up here fairly quickly, and the order was in drafted after the, actually after the writ was filed, and this is not being trial counsel, only just reading the transcripts. It seems that that's, from the way the judge just kept saying that over and over again, that that's what they were trying to do, and throw that option out there. You know, if you don't want, I'm going to impose this time. If you don't want it this time, then inpatient treatment is your way to avoid this time. So I still think it was meant to have the same coercive effect that it does in civil contempt proceedings. The order may need to be, you know, the way the order was drafted probably doesn't comply with the Lewis v. Lewis decision, and that order maybe needs, the district court maybe needs to make those specific findings if that's what they intended to do. I think this court can also infer that from the record because it's said so many times in that last chain of time is imposed. But I think the better way would probably be for it to actually be in the order. But I think that it was meant to have that, it was meant to have the coercive effects and therefore is a, therefore should be subject to the higher constitutional standard of a criminal contempt proceeding.
But there's also then the further question of whether in the context of a child custody dispute, not a parental rights termination, but between two private parties, whether the price for continuing to pursue drug addiction may be loss of unsupervised visitation or even loss of visitation altogether. But should it be being jailed for criminal contempt on an order to get clean and sober?
Yes, and
I mean, that's an interesting policy problem.
Yes, and first, I said policy-wise, I still think this is a civil contempt order, not a criminal contempt order, and the parents facing one of, basically a loss of the liberty interest one way or the other. They're either facing the loss of the liberty interest in their relationship with their child or the loss of their personal liberty interest. And I understand that the U.S. Supreme Court has found those to not be on the same level. The overarching concern has always been in custody cases, the best interest of the child. And for the policy considerations, the best interest of the child is actually served by continued contact and relationship with the parent. And so to facilitate that relationship, if the district court has to hold over their head the sanction of incarceration to get them to not use drugs and therefore to protect the safety and the best interest of the subject minor, to get this parent back into their lives, and this parent who wants to be a part of their life, then I think that's a fair way to balance all the interests. Now, if the parent is just willing to walk away, or if this is a TPR context, or even a dependency context, and the courts do this in the dependency drug court program, these parents are in this, and they're still subject to civil contempt for violating orders, violating the case plans and the reunification plans. Now, it's a longer process, and you know, still, it's the same thing, just more drawn out. Either they're not going to see the kids, not going to have any contact with the kids, and have that extreme deprivation of not going, not just from supervised visitation or Skype, but to having no contact, because oftentimes that contact with that parent who's using drugs, even if it's supervised, is still harmful and contrary to the best interest. And they really have to decide, and the parents can decide, hey, I don't want to put my liberty interest, my personal liberty interest at stake, and I'm willing to give up my liberty interest in my relationship with my child.
Yeah.
And if they make that choice, then I would then say, yes, then improper for the court to impose a civil contempt remedy. But I don't think that's the situation here. In this case, she was not willing to walk away from the relationship with the child and was actually asking that the visitation be reinstated. And as long as she's asking for that to be reinstated, then I think the holding the threat over her personal liberty, because it's in the best interest of the child, is not much different than what we do in child support matters. And this also benefits not only the child, but it benefits my client indirectly, because I would submit that whatever's in the best interest of the child, as with most parents, parents benefit from the child's happiness and from the best interest indirectly. And in this case, my client would be benefiting that mom would actually, the mom could have a safe and productive and constructive relationship with their child, and without fear of the many things that parents do, the tragedies that we see with parents are when you mix parenting and illegal drug use. Now, some of the other things that were brought up by counsel At the hearing, I believe that once the prima facie case was laid out, mom had the, she had the obligation and the ability to rebut the contempt. And some of the things that weren't brought out to the district, the record is devoid of, mom could have brought her doctor in and say, I prescribed this and this is what it's for. But when I was going through the record, I actually didn't see that. Mom kind of relied on the fact, well, dad doesn't have firsthand knowledge that I was using drugs. He got it from the text messages, or he got it from the fact that I have positive drug tests of options. So kind of what they're saying, at least what they agreed to, is the logical conclusion. If someone doesn't see, if my client doesn't see her shooting up or actively smoking meth, then he can't put an affidavit or declaration in saying that, presenting a prima facie case that she's using drugs. And I think that's just, and that's just not the way 5060 was laid out, or our statutes are laid out, that if he had a good faith basis and the protections are there, that's why you have due process to serve, because mom got the hearing to rebut whatever allegations my client made, and the contempt time would only be posed if she was unable to successfully do that, which she was unable to successfully do. Asking if the order wasn't ambiguous, it wasn't criminal contempt, so the proper standard was used, and there was no violation of public policy, because this actually serves the best interest of the child, which is locked up with our public policy. And if there's no further questions, I ask to move to the court.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kersey.
Thank you. I have just a couple of things with respect to what counsel said. With respect to the contention that the hearing on contempt or that the OSC process was stayed at some point, on May 19th of 2015, the court actually closed the case based on, and was already aware at that point of the patch program issues, was already aware of the text message issues, was already aware of all those things and closed the case. When dad refiled with a counter motion for contempt, it was specifically because mom filed her motion for reinstatement at that point.
So what's the current status of mom's visitation of this child?
Mom has telephonic and Skype contact. She has allowed supervised visitation, but over the past year has not been able to exercise any of that.
Okay, and does the record support that? Do we have I appreciate your answer because I asked the question,
right.
But does the record support that, or is that not before us in any way?
The record doesn't support what's happened since the
Okay, event. Thanks.
In terms of the argument about the prima facie case laid out in the affidavit, I would submit that it still needs to be based on some sort of personal knowledge. In family law cases, when you have this type of, when you have a contempt issue and you have an affidavit, it's, I didn't receive the child support. I didn't get my visitation when I was supposed to get it. In this case, we're going back to a closed case and talking about things that happened before and saying, well, remember, Judge, there were past failed drug tests. Remember, Judge, these things happened in the past. But it's not within his personal knowledge. And I don't think that he can cure it at the hearing under the law. I don't think he can cure and say, well, it's her burden now to show. I mean, that's kind of the backwardness that we're talking about here, is that it is a criminal contempt. And it's really because mom filed her motion for reinstatement of visitation. If she had never filed her motion to reinstate her visitation, she would never have been sentenced to jail. Everything happened prior to her filing that motion for reinstatement. So if she had just said, you know what, I am going to walk away and not try to get visitation at this stage, yeah, she wouldn't have been held in contempt. That's admitted. But I don't think that makes the process that happened thereafter of how she was held in contempt.
So what's a court to do? Let's say you have a custody order and one of the conditions is, and it's agreed upon, that the mother will not use drugs or drink.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes ahead and uses drugs and drinks, but is exercising visitation while doing so, even though a prior court order incorporated her agreement not to do that.
Right.
What's supposed to happen at that point? It's entirely child custody context.
Right. I think the proper remedy is to terminate the visitations, to, you know, tell mom to know in certain terms, you must go to inpatient, I can't order,
you
but
think-
if you don't, then you're not going to get supervised visitation back. You're not going to get visitation back.
But there's no avenging the violation of the order.
I don't think there should be a criminal avenging or a punishment of the order in this context, within the context of best interest in a child custody case.
And is there law on that?
There's no law on that that I'm aware of in the state of Nevada. In terms of California, there's statutory laws regarding, and it's not exactly on point.
Yeah, there's the Nolan case, which is, but that's a reunification case.
Right, and the California statute says you really can't
do that
in jail for a violation of a drug test, essentially. But it's not exactly on point.
Well, there's a California statute that point blank says that.
Right, right. And that would be a public policy issue for this state, I suppose. Looks like I'm out of time, so I'll submit.
I'm sorry, I took it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, any other questions?
Colleagues?
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your arguments today and briefing on the case, and it will stand submitted, and the court will...